Chapter 52. Hunted. Stirring in the camp snapped the Shalane out of a blissfully dreamless sleep just before Dacen stooped to wake her, and when she woke she needed no explanation for the hurried movements. Somewhere in the forest behind them, the Uyumak thumped their chests and beat sticks against trunks, familiar sounds introduced to her during the last days of the doomed caravan. The rhythmic pattering struck fear into her heart, and she nearly forgot to collect her bedroll before moving to the horse that Kimdan finished saddling as she approached. Dawn struggled to make its presence known. Fog clumped thickly about them, blinding their eyes, dampening their cloaks, and matting their hair. Mirel grabbed her daughter's hand briefly as she walked by, Cadean seeing to her horse. Shirtan was already astride his mount, head darting about at every sound. The Shalane checked the anemon as she waited for the rest of the company to mount. Jen yet lived. What comfort this brought was short-lived. "We ride fast," Maywin informed them, signalling for everyone to come close. "They have our trail and likely know exactly where we are going. It will be easy to get separated in this fog. Keep to the path. If you do lose your way, ride in widening circles until you find the road. Keep the sun and the mountains to your left. The fog should clear by mid-morning. Ride hard!" They started slowly until they were sure everyone was on the trail. After a quick glance over her shoulder, Maywin spurred to a gallop, dark hair streaming behind her. The Shalane rode just behind the half-elf and Shirtan, the soldiers bringing up the rear. While Maywin had described the fog as a blanket, it was a ragged one, clarity and blinding obscurity alternating in irregular succession. They rode single file down a road as wide as a man is high, pushing the horses to the limit to gain time and distance. Maywin reined the party in as they ascended a slight rise into a clearing in the fog. She rode around, counting to make sure no one had drifted away. The Shalane patted her horse as steam shot from its nostrils. The thumping Uyumak still dogged them, sounding uncomfortably close. Maywin frowned. "We should have put some distance between us with that run. They have elements out here on this plain. We need to get somewhere high and more defensible. The fog works to their advantage. They can smell us, but we can't see them. Stay close. We will leave the road." Again they streaked forward, pounding hard down the stone path before them, the sun breaking above the horizon to their right, casting diffuse light through the mist. The Shalane's heart pounded, wetness matting her veil to her face and hampering her vision as she struggled to keep Maywin in view. A sinking dread took hold of her. "We're not going to get off this shard." Thumping behind her and to the right startled her by its nearness. "They are 100 yards behind us," Maywin yelled. "Break left, now!" As one, the horses plunged off of the road, mud and grass flipping off their swift hooves. The Shalane hung onto the reins as they ascended a steep hill she hadn't seen, the riders in front of her fading in and out of the fog. Abruptly, they emerged into the weak morning sunshine, cresting a hill with a narrow top of knee-high, thick-bladed grass just starting to brown. Before her stretched a sea of misty white, interrupted by islands of hilltops jutting up into the clear. "Look!" Dacen yelled, pointing below them. Eddies swirled in the fog below as Uyumak, practically invisible save for the disturbance in the mist, raced toward the hill. "Everyone that can fight, dismount and put the horses in a tight group behind us," Maywin ordered. "Wouldn't we be at an advantage mounted?" Dacen asked. "We need to protect the horses. Uyumak are not noble. The horses give us an advantage and they will kill them before they kill you. Do it." "Jaren," Mirel yelled, "you stay with my daughter." Jaren nodded, moving his horse to the Shalane's side and taking the reins from her. "Uyumak can spook horses," he explained. The Shalane trembled. Her mother, Jeff, and Fenner joined her as the fighters jumped from their horses and pushed them back. The soldiers, Maywin in the middle, formed a line at the edge of the hill. The half-elf drew her bow, pulling an arrow to her cheek. Shirtan rode away from the line, heading for the Shalane's tightly knotted group, before Aethon intercepted him. "Your Grace," he pleaded, "we need your magic." Shirtan, already pale, turned an even whiter hue.
"I am not
Shirtan," the Shalane yelled, anger welling up within her. "Get in the fight, for all our sakes. This is what you were born for."
"The moon is not full," he yelled defensively. "My magic is yet weak. I will be of no use."
Aethon appeared ready to present some argument, but Maywin's bow singing and a yell from the men at the line prompted him to abandon his entreaty and rush forward to help with his own magic. Shirtan sidled up to Jeff, not meeting anyone's eye for fear of what he would find there. The soldiers shifted their weight and gripped and re-gripped their swords. Maewen shot 3 times before shouldering her bow and drawing her knives. The defenders stepped back as a band of Uyumark hunters slammed into the line as one. Long-limbed and lanky, they soundlessly pressed the attack, their many eyes darting among several targets. The Shalane startled at their long claws and frightening speed. The men fought off lightning slashes and chopped at the bony arms, holding the charge at bay. Sharp Uyumark nails shrieked along plated armor and tore clothing and flesh. Aethon, riding behind the battle, incanted. One of the Uyumark turned from its human opponent and attacked the other hunters. The confusion afforded the advantage to a nearby dark guard, who quickly finished off the creatures and gave aid to the Ogmerian soldiers. Sharp swords hacked away arms and impaled the bodies of the silent enemy. 2 of the attackers finally broke and ran, Maewen finishing them with her bow. "How many?" Aethon asked after the battle was over. 18, Maewen calculated, grabbing her horse. "If there are 2 companies out there, they should have numbered 22. We are missing 4, though they may have returned to give news of our position. It is time to be a little unpredictable. Let's check the wounded and get moving." What wounds there were received a hasty, rough bandaging of shredded cloak, and in short order Maewen led them off the hill and back into the fog, veering west toward the mountains. She kept the pace even, saving the strength of the horses against the need to flee. As the half-elf had said, the rising sun coaxed away the fog by mid-morning and added greatly to the relief of the party. The land spread green about them, rolling and inviting, as pleasant a morning as any traveller could ask to favour her for a journey. The far-reach mountains rose a hazy grey-green before them, steep, grassy foothills gashed with gullies crouching at their base. They rode in silence until midday, crossing several gurgling streams as Maewen gradually turned north to avoid the uneven terrain of the foothills. As they halted for lunch, Maewen explained that she hoped she would find more animals nearer the mountains, for as yet the mighty herds she had described the night before had not materialized. She said, "The gullies and washes also provide us a quick way into the mountains and more defensible places where we can find better concealment. With the hunters mostly destroyed, we should be able to stay ahead of the main body of Uyumark, unless there are more in front of us." The rest of the afternoon saw nothing of animals, Uyumark, or conversation. The territory simultaneously fascinated and worried them. As travellers, their eyes and hearts anticipated what views awaited just behind the next rise, around the next bend, or just behind a jut of rock. As prey, they feared the same. Once evening approached, the haze and fog returned to accumulate in the low places as Maewen searched the high ones for a defensible place to encamp. As the sky turned deep purple and the fog threatened to overtake them, the Shalane noticed a grin cross Maewen's face. "This way!" the tracker yelled before turning her horse and galloping up a hill. As they approached, a ruined wall of loose river rock crowning the hill appeared to her veiled vision, the party passing inside through a narrow breach. While the wall barely rose to the level of her waist, Maewen was clearly pleased with her find. After Captain Tolbrook helped the Shalane from her saddle, Maewen approached and led her to the other side of the animal where they could converse in private. The half-elf lifted the 3 stone necklaces from off her neck and assisted the Shalane in donning them again. The Shalane regarded her in the warm evening light, finding a brightened, even lively cast to Maewen's eyes. "I cannot thank you enough, Shalane, for lending me these. While in such a camp as this, I do not feel at liberty to tell you a very private tale, but you should know that Samian is my father. This is indeed a wise gift to you from Jen, and if you see him again, you shall give him your gratitude. But you had best do it before I see him, for I will most likely kill him for keeping this a secret from me." "What do the stones do?" the Shalane asked. "What am I to do with your father when I dream? I cannot even understand him. I'm sure he will tire of me soon." "I do not know all, but the stones will lend you breath, strengthen your frame, and help you heal. As for my father, he is a warrior, but a gentleman. He could return to the sleep of Erelinda, but after I communicated to him our circumstances, he is anxious to help you. Some teaching can be done without words." Jeff ended their conversation, approaching tentatively, book in hand. "There you are, Maewen. I suppose you are in search of information about this wall. Yes, I know that a wall might be a bit dull, but if it is the residue of some lost civilization, then it may be worthy of note. Lost is certainly an appropriate word in this case.
I will tell anyone who is interested more when I return. I want to scout around before full dark and full fog."
Maywen sped away after asking Kimdan to care for her horse, and after the horses were properly unburdened, brushed and staked out, they dined on a meagre meal of bread and dried meat, whose flavour had long since bored the tongue into apathy. To their delight, the fog did not rise to envelop them, allowing a hazy view of the moons. Stars and shards gradually bloomed into view as the sun loosened its bright grip upon sky, cooling a gentle zephyr as refreshing and clear as a mountain pool. Maywen returned shortly, Jeff dogging her, and the Shalane crossed quickly to them along with others she had informed of Maywen's promise of information. Before 10 words were out, the entire camp had gathered around her save Jaren and Tolbrook, who kept vigil at the wall. "The place we have stumbled upon is nothing more than a corral for animals used by the dwarves long ago. They trained dogs to harry sheep, goats, and even elk into these hilltop enclosures, shearing or slaughtering them at need." "Would the dwarves come this far out of their mountain strongholds?" Jeff asked. "I thought they lived mostly on wild mountain game." "They preferred the mountains, but they loved meat. There simply wasn't enough game to be had to satisfy their appetite for it. They were poor hunters due to their general lack of stealth or general tendency toward boisterous behaviour, however you wish to view it. They were a thunder in the mountains, and the animals learned to run at the sound of them. Hence they built these hilltop corrals, defensible and above the fog. The mountains nearby housed several different but related clans, the Gozan, the Shek-Kur, and Jorek-Kur, to name a few. The dwarven kings lived several days north of here in a mighty mountain they named Kor-Takat-Nak. We will see if we are given the luxury of following our present course." "Were all the dwarves killed in the Shattering?" Mirel inquired during a pause. "The dwarves disappeared at some undetermined point before the Shattering. As the time called Middle Peace drew to a close, the intrigues of Mikik undermined the strength of the kingdoms of man, war and civil war ripening Kihal for destruction. Elves and dwarves, on account of their long lives and deeper wisdom, did not fall victim as easily to Mikik's schemes, but they were few in number. They needed the race of men to beat Mikik back as they had done before. Both elves and dwarves sent ambassadors, advisers, and embassies to try to piece together a unity among the human kingdoms. But the schisms were too deep and too bitter to re-mortar. It was the dwarves who first noticed the approach of Mikik's vast army streaming across this very plain. The elves and dwarves determined they would stand together with whatever human forces they could convince of their report. The plan was laid, but with little confidence of success. The elves and several thousand humans set a line of defense around Emerald Lake, hoping to control the numbers of creatures Mikik could bring to bear by throwing up defenses at a narrow constriction in the valley between the Iron Heart and Wardwall Mountains. Mikik's army approached, but the promised aid from the dwarves never arrived. Neither did a promised contingent of Rugothian men from Echo Hold. Since Kor Takat Nak and Echo Hold are in close proximity to each other, it was simply assumed that Mikik's army had overtaken and destroyed them both. The following years and the Shattering permitted no time or means for investigation of the matter. When I explored this shard last summer, I had hoped to find signs of them, but the size of the shard only allowed me to find Elder Lurimora and return. I have a hard time believing such a race as they, hearty, vigorous, and fierce, met with total annihilation. At unification, I sincerely hoped to encounter a group of them marching to our aid. Elves and dwarves were very different, but I would rather have a contingent of dwarves than elves at my side in a close fight.
"Why?" Shatan asked. "Seems they would be too short to be effective."
Maywen disagreed fervently.
"The dwarves were short, yes, but stronger than men, possessing more endurance than elves, and they were more relentless than either one. Uyumak hated dwarves more than any other enemy. When both sides reached the unspoken point of exhaustion and called a cessation in the fighting to recuperate, the dwarves would not let the enemy rest, harrying them unendingly. While it may seem glorious or satisfying to decapitate an enemy or run a sword through its heart, it is just as effective to smash its knees with a warhammer or disembowel it with a sharp battle axe."
"There is something out there!"
Jaren yelled. Drawn steel rang through the night as soldiers pulled weapons and ran to where Jaren stood. The Shalane found herself guided back toward the horses by a firm hand from Dacen, Cadean performing the same service for her mother. Fenner, Jeff, Chertan and one of his soldiers joined them shortly thereafter. The Shalane gritted her teeth at the Ha'ulric's lack of iron. Ahead of them, Jaren pointed into the fog below. Something yellow rose up out of the fog just for an instant. It was round and wet, about the size of a water skin. It looked like, well, an eye, Maewyn finished for him, unlimbering her bow. Throgs.
What in Mikik's name are throgs?
Jaren asked. Quiet. I will explain later, she remonstrated. Just kill anything coming up that hill. The night took on a hollow, haunted feeling as they waited in the dark, every sense attuned to the sounds of the breeze waving through the grass and the nervous movements of horses and men. Just when Maewyn would relax her bow, some rustling, not quite natural, would snap it up again. A reek carried on the wind that reminded them of rotting meat in a hot summer market and wrinkled their noses, eliciting quiet oaths from those at the wall. Then they all saw what Jaren spied many minutes before. An oblong orb, wet and yellow in the moonlight, drifted up from the fog, its round black iris focusing on them. Maewyn fired, but the eye plunged back into the fog and her arrow flew harmlessly into the night.
What is that thing?
Jaren asked again in a hushed tone. It's an eye, she explained. It floats up from the head of the throg. The sound of a rock falling from the top of the wall and thudding to the ground spun heads in that direction, but nothing presented itself in the ample moonlight.
It may be moving around, and there may be more than one, Maewyn announced quietly. They know we are here.
They should leave. The last she spoke to the swirling fog ahead of them, as if trying to convince whatever concealed itself inside to depart. Another rock fell near the same place as the last.
Are they toying with us?
Jaren speculated to himself as they fixed their gaze to that spot, a rustling noise behind the wall in that area, drawing Maewyn's arrow point in that direction. As she moved left, the men moved out of her line of sight and followed her closely. The horses nickered and stamped nervously as the uncomfortable smell of decay befouled their nostrils.
What is this? Jaren demanded of Maewyn.
Then Jeff yelled in pain, and two of the horses reared and screamed, pulling at their stakes. Eyes darted about frantically. Standing in the moonlight 10 paces from the Shalane was what in shape most resembled a dog, but one that would be found curled on the hearth of Mikik's fire. In size it was a mastiff, in form a greyhound, in colour sable. Coarse, wiry hair jutted from its body in uneven patches. Several small, spider-like eyes glinted like flint in the weak light, ringing an abnormally large head. What a snout would have been was a hole from which 3 fleshy tubules had shot forth, one embedding itself on Jeff's leg and 2 others attaching to the flanks of the horses. Blood pulled from its victims pulsed along the tubules, swelling the creature's belly. Fenner stood frozen at her husband's side. Dacen leapt past her and brought his sword down on the tubule, leeching blood from the bard, severing it. The tubule slurped back into the mouth of the throg, the other 2 returning with it as the horses bolted into the night. The throg turned to go, the large floating eye descending to fit inside a cavity of its head as it sprinted for the wall. Maewyn shot, but a rearing horse took the arrow instead.
There are more!
Jaren yelled. Panicking horses pulled up stakes, bucked and bolted, scattering the party and throwing the hilltop into chaos.
To the centre!
Maewyn yelled, everyone endeavouring to obey in the midst of flying hooves. 4 more throgs jumped the wall and regarded the party for a moment before chasing the horses into the night and disappearing with them.
Jeff is hurt!
Fenner finally yelled, kneeling at his side. The Shalane rushed over with Maewyn, the remainder watching the wall for more signs of the beasts. Jeff lay pale and unmoving, insensible eyes fixed on the heavens. 2 feet of the tubule still attached to his leg drained blood onto the ground. Maewyn reached down and yanked it out, a hunk of flesh coming with it, while the Shalane worked to heal the handsome bard. After several seconds, comprehension returned to his eyes and his face coloured. He seemed about to talk, but Fenner hushed him with her finger. For the next hour, every ear extended into the dark, only to be assaulted at random intervals with the agony of dying horses. Nearly an hour of complete silence passed before anyone had the stomach to speak, and it was Jaren.
Now do you want to explain what those were, Maewyn?
As I said, she returned bitterly,
those are throgs.
Mikik invented those late in the Second War as a way to track down anyone gone into hiding. They can communicate with the mind of a chukka,
to whom they are bound. As you saw, the eye they possess allows them to spy silently and at a distance, and they drain the blood of animals for sustenance. They are intelligent, but not hearty. Under better circumstances, we could have killed them easily. They don't often chance coming near an armed party. They were hungry.
So you are saying that the Uyumak know where we are?
Aethon asked, his high-pitched voice almost at a whine. Yes, Maywin answered, a calm counterpoint to the terror breeding around her. But the worst blow to us is the loss of the horses. Once we killed the hunters, we had the advantage. Without the horses, it falls to the Uyumak again.
It is obvious that this entire trip was badly planned and horribly mismanaged, Shatan spat. Regent Ogbith must have been bereft of reason when he approached this. Only an idiot would not have foreseen the Uyumak threat. We needed 5 times the numbers and much better intelligence. Blood-sucking dogs, Mikik's breath. I didn't hear the regent mention those.
The Shalane, feelings raw, could listen no longer. The only thing he didn't foresee was that the Ha'ulric would be the most useless coward ever to walk Kihol. For Eldaloth's sake, Shatan, you were in all the planning meetings for nearly a year. Did you think to voice your concerns then, or were all the details just too boring for you to pay attention to? Perhaps you spent your time trying to determine which concubine to visit, or decide on a brothel where you hadn't sufficiently sowed your seed. Regent Ogbith treated me like a daughter, and I loved him. Don't ever take his name on your lips again, unless it is to praise his memory. He was 10 times the man you are.
Shatan slapped her, pain erupting on her cheek.
Shatan!
Aethon yelled, running forward.
I will not be,
Shatan managed before Jaren dropped him with a thunderous punch to the face. The Ha'ulric crumpled to the ground, dazed and bleeding from a cut under his eye. The 2 remaining Ogmerian soldiers drew their swords, Jaren meeting their challenge. Before a fight could erupt, Aethon interposed.
Weapons away! Put them away! He ordered, eyes frantic. Can't you see that this serves no one?
After several tense moments, both sides scabbarded their swords, and Aethon dropped to a knee, pressing part of his cloak to Shatan's cut while helping him sit. When the Ha'ulric's eyes did focus, they burned with anger and shame.
As I was saying,
he continued, standing with Aethon's help,
I will not be talked to in that manner by anyone, especially not my wife.
Jaren's gagging tore the Shalane's attention away from her husband. Her protector had grabbed his throat, unable to breathe. Shatan said,
You see, my magic may not be powerful enough to do great things, but men can be killed by simple ones.
The Ha'ulric breathed heavily, face registering exhaustion from the effort required to cast the spell.
I suggest you hold your tongue, Shalane, or this will happen again, only to those more dear.
Jaren fell to the grass, face turning purple.
What have you done?
The Shalane demanded, Jaren spasming.
Undo it, Shatan, now!
Shatan turned away, Aethon helping him toward his horse while talking quickly to him in low tones. Maywin ran forward, pulling her knife.
Get his hands away from his throat,
she ordered. Kim, Dan, and Dacen pulled them away with difficulty, Jaren thrashing and desperately trying to wrench his arms away from his companions. Cadean and another dark guard immobilized his legs.
Come close, Shalane,
Maywin said.
And be ready to heal him. We may have a chance to save him.
As the Shalane knelt near Dacen, grasping Jaren's forearm, Maywin cut into Jaren's throat, slicing it along its length. Jaren convulsed in pain, momentarily stopping the procedure. Once Jaren was subdued, she continued by wedging open the windpipe with the tip of her knife until she found the obstruction Shatan had created by transmuting the air inside it. Working quickly, Maywin removed a smooth stone from Jaren's airway.
Now, Shalane?
The Shalane concentrated, sending her thoughts to the injured throat and healing it from the inside out. When done, the Shalane opened her eyes and sat to rest herself. Jaren took several moments to relax, rubbing his throat where Maywin had sliced him open. Shatan watched from a distance, Aethon lecturing him animatedly. Jaren stood.
I wish Jen would have killed him. I should have helped. He always did see clearly.
Mirel stepped forward and grabbed the front of Jaren's tunic.
Listen to me, she hissed. I know Shatan is unbearable, but you must subdue your feelings. Bury them, Jaren. The Shalane will suffer indignities, but she must stay alive, and I need you alive to see that accomplished. If Eldaloth is with us, we can hope her sufferings will be short. Please control yourself. We have already lost Jen and cannot afford to lose you.
I'm sorry, First Mother. I will try. But this I swear. When he lays a hand on the Shalane, I will mete out worse to him. What stings her will bruise him. If she bleeds, he will gush. If a bone of hers is cracked, one of his will be broken. If she falls by some blow of his, then he will fall into his grave by one of mine.
I hope it will not come to that, Mirel soothed, rubbing his arm. Padre Aethon no doubt is busily chastening Shirtan on the matter now, and I think Aethon is the only one Shirtan is listening to. Just exercise caution and act for our greater good. Now, if you and Dayson would step away for a moment, I need to have a private word with my daughter.
The Shalane stepped aside with her mother, the dark guard surrounding them at a discreet distance. Mirel took her daughter's hand and pulled it to her heart, thinking several moments.
I am sorry, mother, the Shalane apologized. I know what you're going to say, and I will keep quiet. I have been so upset, angry, and now terrified. I have been saying and thinking the most awful things. No, daughter, Mirel counseled, voice stern. Silence is not enough now. I told you after your wedding that you would need to let me deal with Shirtan and Aethon, and you have to let me do it. I know it will be hard, but you must act the part of the submissive wife for now. You must take Shirtan's side, even against your conscience. You must be obedient. And yes, you must keep your tongue. I know this is repugnant, I know it. But for the salvation of all and for the salvation of a few now, you must suffer. It should not be so, but there is no helping it until we are in safer times and places. I promise you there will be amends for you some day.
I can see that this must be you, mother. I doubt even you could know what pains it will give me.
Mirel embraced her. I can only imagine. But you have a mother's promise that it will not last forever. My daughter will be as happy as she once was. I will not rest until she is.
There is something you should know, the Shalane offered after several moments. When I was in the canyon, I could heal Jen without any effort. If I touched him, he healed instantly.
Mirel put her at arm's length.
Shalane, she exclaimed, before quieting her own voice. Shalane, you know what that means, don't you?
He loves me.
The Shalane tried to decipher Mirel's mood. It hovered between awed shock and feverish excitement.
Did he see you unveiled?
He did. It was an accident, but the proofs of his love were there before he saw me.
He saw you unveiled?
Did he? No. It was the strangest thing. I could see the desire rise in his eyes, but just as he took a step toward me, he shrugged it off as if emerging from a wild dream. He wouldn't say how he could resist me, but I walked for days with him without a veil, and he never acted the least bit affected by me other than incessantly nagging me to wear it again.
Mirel raised her hand to her mouth, speechless while she considered her daughter's news.
Eldaloth, help us all if Aethon or Shirtan ever found out. You bury that secret deep, Shalane. You shouldn't have told me, though I am glad that you did. This is incredible, dangerous, and wonderful. But what are you feeling, mother? I am happy for you, Shalane, and I forbid you to be sullen any more. You won the love of one of the best men to walk this world without him having seen your face. Even if you never saw him again, the fact that he loved you should teach you something about yourself. I know you are diffident, but think of Jen and ask yourself what kind of woman he would love, and I mean truly love. That is who you are. If only every woman could have such a sure sign of a love not dependent on desire.
I confess, the Shalane said, there were times I wished the desire was there. I would really like to know what it is like to be kissed by a man who feels for me as he does. You kissed him after all.
Mirel's voice turned sad.
He told you about that, then? His heart wasn't in it, unfortunately. Apparently it belonged to you. Don't think his passion for you wasn't there within him, though. You know him well enough to know that he would never give in to it, to think that I ever thought he loved Fenner. Oh, Shalane, I hope he still lives.
He does.
You know this?
I think so,
she answered, not ready to reveal the anemone or what it meant.
I think I will know when he is dead. I will feel it.
It could be a bond formed between you by the same affinity that allows you to heal him. If he is still alive, then he very likely has escaped Elder Lurimora. This is good news. All is not lost.
You have given me much to think about, and in turn you think about what I said. I will.
Merel kissed her forehead.
Good night, daughter.
The Shalane spread her damp blanket and lay down with her arms wrapped around her. She felt the faint warmth of Jen's anemone against her side, the night's terror feeding her longing for him. She had always had many occasions to act other than she felt, and she wondered why it was now, when pretending was most needed, that she could no longer do it. The role fate asked her to play had changed from her first imaginings of her duty, its nature more alien and unnatural than it ever had been. She was a novice actress asked to deliver the most difficult lines of a dramatic play to an audience that was, at best, disinterested in anything she said or felt. But the challenge of her evolving role could not explain away all her inability to perform it. She had changed too, and Jen's hands were the ones wet from shaping her clay. He taught her to see her calling and herself as two different entities, and whenever he talked with her, she sensed she had worth outside of her role as the Shalane. He taught her to despise abject submission and degrading self-abnegation. Most of all, his companionship in the canyon showed her she was interesting beyond her beauty and calling, that she was worthy of the love of an honorable, powerful man.
What would you do to see him again? She asked herself. Anything, came the reply. Then do it. Act the part. Endure it well.
Comfort followed resolution, and she cleared her mind, preparing herself for what awaited her in dream. A horse's dying scream, the first for hours, carried faintly on the breeze and startled her from her half-sleep.
That's all of them, she heard Jaren whisper from behind her. You've been counting? Cadern asked in turn.
You haven't?
I didn't see much point, her mother's protector confessed. When I saw those creatures chase them out, I gave them up completely. Damnedest horrible things I've ever seen.
You've the right of it there. We are in grave danger, my friend. Whatever his insolence and disrespect, Shatan was right about one thing. We were not prepared for this. Only the hand of God will get us home.
The Shalane shuddered. Jen had not taught her courage, and she could no longer lean on his.